Hello everyone, it's World News. It is now the 36th day since Israel launched its war on Gaza. Palestinians are enduring relentless bombardments on civilian infrastructure, including residential buildings, schools, medical facilities, and everywhere else in the besieged enclave. Seven people were killed in an airstrike on a home in Beit Lahia, located in the northern part of the strip. In Gaza, city operations have been suspended at Al-Shifa Hospital after it completely ran out of fuel. The Israeli military has repeatedly targeted this and other medical facilities as well over the past 5 weeks. Total death toll from the war is now over 11,000. Majority of victims are women and children. Hundreds of people are still missing under the rubble of bombed out buildings as well. According to reports, more than half the housing units in Gaza have been destroyed or damaged by Israeli bombs. Meanwhile, the International Committee of the Red Cross warns the healthcare system in Gaza has reached a point of no return. The committee says hospital supplies are running out and it is becoming increasingly unsafe to work as healthcare staff. This comes as head of the World Health Organization says half the hospitals in Gaza are not functioning at all.
Since the 7th of October, WHO has verified more than 250 attacks on healthcare in Gaza and the West Bank, hospitals, clinics, patients, ambulances. Last week, WHO documented 5 attacks on 5 hospitals in one day. In the past 48 hours alone, 4 hospitals have been put out of action. Half of the Gaza Strip's 36 hospitals and 2/3 of its primary healthcare centers are not functioning at all.
WHO chief also said that those hospitals that are functioning are operating way beyond their capacities. He said that on average, a child is killed every 10 minutes in the coastal territory. Tedros added that 1.5 million people are displaced right now, said that they're looking for shelter anywhere they can find it, though nowhere and no one is safe. Hospitals have become a regular target of Israeli bombing. On Friday, an Israeli strike hit Gaza City's biggest hospital, the Al-Shifa, leaving at least 14 Palestinians dead. With the Israeli onslaught against the Gaza Strip entering its 36th day, residents of Gaza City continue to suffer on a daily basis. Here's what some of them had to say about the dire humanitarian situation they find themselves in.
When my grandchildren went to school, and then I don't know if the ambulance took them or people took them to Al-Shifa Hospital. When I started looking for them, they told me that my son's wife had passed away, and we found the children undergoing treatment. I didn't know where to go.
The situation is very difficult. The patients, the injured, and the martyrs are lying on the ground. The medical staff is not enough, and there are no treatments. My brother is injured, and his condition is very difficult. We wait all day for treatments and medications. There are no medicines and medical equipment. We need help because the situation is extremely severe.
My daughter was bombed while waiting to buy us a loaf of bread. She was waiting in the queue of the bakery to buy bread. She didn't manage to. She got injured, suffered a skull fracture and became paralyzed. She needs treatment abroad in Egypt. We cannot provide treatment for her here. She cannot move her feet or legs, and I feed her and dress her. Treatment here is not available, as patients like her need treatment abroad.
I ask God that Arab countries stand with us, alongside us. We are exhausted in the name of God. We are people living by the mercy of God. Feel for us. We are also human beings.
The headline for today is the targeting of hospitals. The occupying regime targeted all hospitals in the Gaza Strip. We are telling them and the whole world that we are still in the hospital, still with the patients, still with the displaced. We, along with thousands of the wounded and medical teams, are still in this hospital. We will serve this hospital and we will not leave it. We will stay with the wounded and the patients, even if we have to provide treatment for them by candlelight. The fuel is supposed to run out within hours, but we will remain here and we will not leave this place no matter what.
Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has conducted retaliatory attacks against Tel Aviv and other areas deep in occupied territories. The military wing, the Al-Qassam Brigades, conducted missile and artillery strikes on Tel Aviv, settlements of Miftahim and Nirim, as well as Ra'im military base near Gaza. Israeli media confirmed the sound of sirens in Tel Aviv, Ashdod, and other central areas. A number of settlers were also injured. Meanwhile, Palestinian resistance fighters continue engaging invading Israeli troops in several areas inside of Gaza. Fighters have conducted drone and artillery strikes on gatherings of Israeli soldiers. They also destroyed a number of their tanks. The Al-Qassam brigades have destroyed 141 Israeli tanks and military vehicles in Gaza since the start of the ground incursion by the regime in late October. Israeli media says 36 of its troops have been killed in the ground operation thus far. The resistance, however, says that is a lie. The death toll is much higher. The senior representative of Hamas in Lebanon has called on Muslim Arab states to take practical action against the Israeli regime as it continues killing Palestinians in Gaza. Osama Hamdan said it is unacceptable for Arab states to have relations with Israel. He called on those countries to cut ties with the regime and stop the process of normalization. Hamdan also called on the international community to hold Israel to account over its crimes against Palestinians. The Hamas representative reiterated that the movement will never give up the fight against the occupation. Iran's president has landed in the Saudi capital to attend a joint emergency summit of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation and Arab League over the Israeli war on Gaza. Now, before departing for Riyadh, Ebrahim Raisi said participants in this meeting are expected to take a firm decision on the issue of Palestine. He reminded OIC was formed to address and follow up on Palestinian cause. Raisi also called for unity among Muslim countries in the face of Israeli atrocities against Palestinians. The Iranian president blamed the U.S. for being the root cause of all Israeli crimes against Palestinians in Gaza. He added that Washington doesn't want Israeli war to stop and is actually fueling the flames. Raisi noted Israel's onslaught against Gaza amounts to genocide and crimes against humanity. Now joining us for some special coverage is Moni Candiel, our Ramallah correspondent. I'd like to welcome you to our little broadcast here. We're going to swing over now to Mona Candiel, our Ramallah correspondent. Hello, Mona. Hope you're safe. What can you tell us there on the ground?
There was a press conference for Palestinian Health Minister Dr. May Al-Kaili in Ramallah. She told reporters that the Israelis, the Israeli army, is hitting the areas around Al-Shifa and against the doctors and paramedics and the Palestinian doctors in the Shifa Hospital and other hospitals. She says that after they had been informed from the doctors at Shifa that at least one infant was martyred because in intensive care because of cut of oxygen there, and she said that 39 other infants are in the intensive care, and they are also threatened to lose their lives. There are calls on the international community, on the Red Cross, the humanitarian aids, the whole world, that it's a genocide being carried out, especially that there were reports by the American administration just recently this day claiming that they are not sure about the Israeli claims that the Palestinian resistance headquarters is already under the Ashifa hospital. The Israelis had been claiming that they know that Palestinian fighters or the resistance are under, are in tunnels under the Ashifa hospital. However, the Americans today said that they are not sure. They cannot confirm these Israeli allegations. But at the end of the day, while the world had been watching and the Israeli military had been bombarding and shelling all the hospitals, it's not about a Shifa hospital. It's clear, as experts are saying, that the Israeli military wants to force the Palestinians out of the Gaza City, the northern Gaza Strip, to flee to the south, and at the same time to completely reoccupy the Gaza Strip, or at least to reoccupy northern the Gaza Strip and the Gaza City. Yesterday, tens of thousands of Palestinians left their left the schools and the hospitals they had been remaining in because of the heavy bombardment and shelling around the Ashifa and even in the vicinity and the of the Shifa hospital and other hospitals, the Israelis had to schools as well. However, as we have friends there and journalists in the Gaza Strip, they reaffirm that many people, hundreds of thousands of Palestinians are still in their homes in northern the Gaza Strip, in Jabalia, in Beit Lahia. And it's not true that all of them had left their homes. However, the Israelis may be using this as a propaganda to continue shelling the areas there. Palestinians are still there in their homes. However, those who had to leave the parts of the Gaza City and northern the Gaza Strip, their homes had been already destroyed, and they were remaining in schools in these areas or in the hospitals. This is about the Gaza Strip. If you want to speak about development in the occupied West Bank, today over 30 Palestinians were arrested by the Israeli soldiers across the occupied West Bank. Israeli forces raided Qalqilia city and surrounded a building there. They claim that one of the Palestinians had been taking shelter there, and he had been wanted by the Israeli military. After several hours, unfortunately, the Israeli soldiers succeeded to arrest this Palestinian, whom they did not reveal his identity. And at least one Palestinian was wounded during the clashes that took place between Palestinian fighters and the Israeli forces. At the time, the Israelis continuing their aggression and continuing their war on the Gaza Strip. Israeli military measures are still are also escalating here in the occupied West Bank. We can say that the entrances of several villages all over the occupied West Bank are completely closed by the Israeli forces, who brought metal gates and huge cement blocks, and also more soldiers are deploying in several areas across the occupied West Bank. And at the same time, the Israeli forces did not stop their night raids all over the occupied West Bank to detain more Palestinians, including children, women. It's not only Palestinian fighters or Palestinian members of the resistance groups or even activists who express their rejection and rejection of the Israeli occupation in the first place, and demanding that this genocide must continue, must immediately come to an end. It's not accepted to continue. It's not accepted that these massacres are being carried out in front of the eyes of the world. Those people are being arrested in addition to women and children.
All right. Thank you, Mona. Stay safe. We'll talk to you soon. Mona Candio, they're joining us from Ramallah now. We're going to swing over to Ashraf Shannon, our correspondent in the besieged Gaza Strip in Khan Yunis. Hello, Ashraf. Hope you're safe. What can you tell us there?
Well, Danny, Israeli tanks are currently inside Shifa Hospital. This is according to doctors from Shifa Hospital who talked to some of the people here at Nasser Hospital. They can hear the roaring of the Israeli tanks and armored vehicles inside the Shifa Hospital compound. Israeli forces already bombed the fifth floor of the surgical department, Shifa Hospital, and killed several people since the early hours of the morning by using drone attacks inside the hospital and using quadcopters to kill and maim people who dare to walk around the hospital itself. Since the early hours of the morning, the main attacks were targeting the Arantisi Hospital, Al Auda Hospital, Indonesian Hospital, as well, of course, Shifa Hospital. It seems that the goal of the Israeli invasion of Gaza is to occupy Shifa Hospital. It remains to be seen whether whether the fighting will subside after Israeli forces entered Shifa Hospital, because since day one they were saying that Shifa Hospital is the base of all Hamas resistance group and other resistance factions in the Gaza Strip, which is definitely untrue, as these allegations are total lies. Hospital, Shifa Hospital, is a civilian infrastructure, civilian place, has nothing to do with the military or any resistance factions in the Gaza Strip. The same thing goes to all hospitals and daycare clinics in the Gaza Strip. Currently, almost all hospitals in Gaza have stopped working, except for Nasser Hospital in the southern Gaza Strip town of Khan Yunis. Humanitarian situation is beyond disastrous, as the Israeli regime has made sure Palestinians in Gaza, nearly 2.3 million, have no water to drink, no water to wash their clothes, no food on the table, nothing whatsoever, not even fuel for vehicles. The only vehicles they see around are ambulances that their hospitals or the International Committee of the Red Crescent has some fuel supplies there, or people who happen to have fuel in their homes, you know, as a backup. Other than that, you hardly find any car driving around, whether in the southern Gaza or northern Gaza itself.
Hundreds of pro-Palestinian protesters block entrances to a factory of UK's largest arms manufacturer, condemning its supply of arms to the Israeli regime.
We're standing here in front of BAE Systems in Britain because this company manufactures parts of F-35 warplanes, which the Israeli occupation forces are currently using to commit a genocide against the people of Gaza.
We're starting to build. We're seeing more and more groups autonomously decide that they want to do this kind of action. We're seeing people abroad decide they want to do this kind of action.
This is one of a series of many actions. It's a growing movement. We're just going to keep shutting down factories for as long as it takes. We need to make it difficult for them. We need to make it not profitable for them. We need to be the headache that they don't want to have so that they will... These people just want to make money. They don't care about these things. They just want to make money. And if we make this too difficult for them and we make it not profitable, they'll start doing something else instead.
The demonstrators held Palestinian flags and large banners reading, "This factory arms genocide." Protesters also called on British authorities to end arms sales to Israel and support for an immediate ceasefire. BAE Systems site in Rochester, Kent, reportedly makes parts for Israel's most advanced fighter jets, their F-35s. That's it for your latest here, everyone. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
This is a part of a speech of Imam Khomeini, the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, on the issue of Palestine. Now the revolutionary and brave Muslims of Palestine are shouting, inviting Muslims to uprising and unity with tremendous effort and divine clamor. I request all Muslims to repose their trust in Allah and join battle alongside the armies that are now defending Palestine and lay no store on their lives and possessions in the defense and liberation of that occupied land.
We seek refuge from Satan the cursed in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear audience. Welcome to a new episode of Spring of the Truth from Arab English Radio. This is Zainab Musavi, and what we do in this program is to listen to certain sentences and speeches of the late founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh. On the subject of Palestine and the Quds, Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh said, "The issue of Quds is not a private or personal issue. It is not the exclusive problem of one country or a present-day problem of all Muslims. Rather, it is a phenomenon concerning the monotheists and the faithful people of all ages, past, present, and future." Well, Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh understood the depth of the Palestinian issue, called for the movement in defense of Palestine and the world's oppressed people. He initiated a movement to free the occupied Quds even before the victory of the Islamic Revolution. Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh for decades had called for a unity against the Zionist regime. According to Imam, the issue of Quds is not a private or personal issue, and it is neither exclusive, you see. Rather, it is a phenomenon concerning the monotheists, and it depends on people of all ages. See the reflection of Imam Khomeini's school of thought in more than one area, especially in terms of Iran's allies who have made use of his ideas in resisting imperialism and colonialism, supporting the oppressed and standing firm against oppression, as well as in understanding and realizing economic independence and self-reliance. The Lebanese and the Palestinian resistance learned a lot from this revolution and benefited from Ayatollah Khomeini's thoughts. You know, they hold their arms in the face of the enemy and the oppressor, and they work for the well-being of the people and to support the weak wherever they are. And this is, in fact, totally in line with the principles of Islamic revolution and what our dear leader, in fact, has taught us. Okay, dear listeners, it seems that our time for this episode has come to its end. For ending, let's just recite the sentence of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh on the concept of Palestine and the Quds. Well, he said, "The issue of Quds is not a private or personal issue. It is not the exclusive problem of one country or a present-day problem of all Muslims. Rather, it is a phenomenon concerning the monotheists and the faithful people of all ages, that is past, present, and future." Thank you very much for being with us in this episode of Spring of the Truth. And until another one, I bid you farewell and may Allah protect you all.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Aperture. At the start of World War II, both the Axis and Allied forces had poisonous shells. A total 50,965 tons of poisonous agents were deployed by both sides of the conflict, including chlorine, phosgene, and mustard gas. Official figures declare about 1.3 million casualties directly caused by chemical warfare agents during the course of the war. Yet the end of the war was not the end of chemical weapons. They were dumped into the dark and deadly depths of the oceans. I'm Zarin Shajeri, and this is Aperture. From 1917 to 1970, the armies of the world's greatest powers systematically dumped 1 million tons of chemical weapons into our oceans, a military secret so well kept that underwater dump sites remain hidden for several decades. This week's program investigates this untold story of global chemical pollution, which threatens our health, environment, and economy. These deadly poisons are leaking little by little into the sea, threatening fishermen, bathers, fish, and the entire ecosystem. Stay with us for the first part of the program.
I found a report that detailed the movement of chemical weapons from depots and storage areas in the United States in the 1940s, 1950s, and 1960s, that noted that some chemical weapons were disposed of at sea.
If you look at the lake, I mean, everybody's first response is, there's no munitions there. I can't see them. I see this beautiful lake. How can you have munitions? Reality, they're there, and we're paying a price for them.
Time bombs are ticking under the sea. 1 million tons of unused chemical weapons lie on seabeds all over the world, and their contents are leaking. This is an unknown story that cutting-edge science and newly declassified documents are now bringing to light.
Chemical weapons in various forms have a very ancient lineage, but their main military usage has derived from the First World War, where they're used in very substantial quantities. The first major gas attack of any significance was the use of chlorine gas during the First World War across a 6 kilometer front at the Second Battle of Ypres, launched on 22nd of April 1915. Other gases are introduced, but the big breakthrough is in 1917 when mustard gas is used for the first time and it becomes known as the king of the war gases.
The new weapons attacked the body inside and out. First affected were the eyes with a severe burning sensation. Then there would be a painful swelling of the lids, followed quickly by blindness, sometimes permanent, caused by ocular clouding. The lungs were assaulted on a cellular level, prompting coughing, bleeding, blistering of tissue, resulting in respiratory distress, pulmonary edema, and death up to 10 days after exposure. The most noticeable things were on the skin, where red lesions appeared before erupting into raised blisters filled with yellow liquid, severely painful to the touch.
The interwar period is a very strange period for chemical warfare. Most of the programs are secret, and the intelligence agencies know very little about the extent and depth and the innovations. And like intelligence agencies the world over, that when you don't know the truth, you assume the worst.
This is a new arsenal started at the beginning of the present emergency. It is now in production and can manufacture more mustard gas in one day than was manufactured by us in all of World War I.
The Americans acquire eventually something like 51 million chemical shells, or 1 million chemical bombs, 100,000 spray tanks ready for a chemical war. I mean, their production is colossal, 135,000 tons of gas.
The chemical war that everyone was expecting never took place. At the Potsdam Conference, the victorious Allies decided to split up the enemy's stocks and dump them in the seas. This was considered the safest alternative at the time, and they imposed official secrecy on this policy until 2008. Dumpings took place all over the world, in the Sea of Japan, the Indian Ocean, the Baltic Sea, the North Sea, the North Atlantic, and off the Côte d'Azur in France. Our investigation began in Italy with sea dumping in the Mediterranean. Those dumpings were unknown by the public until Gianluca Defoe, a reporter from Milan, broke the story in his best-selling book, Poisons of State. Documents uncovered by Defoe revealed never-before-known details of how chemical weapons from both sides in the war ended up in the sea. As far as the Italian weapons are concerned, on the Allied side, it was a daring air raid that brought their chemical weapons to the seas. On December 2nd, 1943, the German Luftwaffe bombed the port of Bari, and it unknowingly provoked the biggest chemical disaster in the Mediterranean. The Allies kept secret their chemical weapons shipment for fear of handing the Nazis a huge propaganda victory. This secrecy hindered efforts to effectively treat hundreds of Italian citizens affected when a cloud of sulfur mustard gas wafted over the city. Find a similar situation in the north of Europe and the Baltic Sea. During the Second World War, it was a theater of combat for the navies of Germany, Finland, and the Soviet Union. The Baltic is today, without doubt, considered the most polluted sea in the world. Cold War politics were a major obstacle to the scientific study of the effects of chemical munitions in the Baltic. With the fall of the USSR, Baltic states were now free to do the work. The Polish Academy of Science began ChemSea.
We are 11 institutions all around the Baltic Sea, countries like Sweden, Finland, Germany, Lithuania, and Poland. Now the Baltic Sea bottom become a resource. There are more and more pipelines, windmills, cables, and so on being laid on the sea bottom, so it's not really safe to proceed without better knowledge. We are basically performing a risk assessment for the dumped munitions from the Second World War, which resides on the Baltic Sea bottom. And we are trying to assess the location of munition, the pollution of the bottom around it, and the impact it might have on the ecosystem. We are at the Bornholm Deep dump site. It's the biggest single dump site in the Baltic Sea. It's about 30,000 tons of munitions dumped here. They believed if we dump it in the Bornholm Deep, when we've got muddy sediments, it will not propagate to other areas of the Baltic because they thought it is totally inert area. No bottom currents, no water movement. It will stay where it is dumped. Nowadays, we know that the salt water which comes from the North Sea travels through this area and is moved to other areas of the Baltic. So if the sediments are contaminated, it can be a point source of contamination which is spreading to other areas in the Baltic. We decided to collect sediments very close to the objects, like half a meter if possible, And we can only do it with the robot, because with the robot we can take sediment samples which will be most probably contaminated with mustard gas or any other warfare agents. Sometimes you are seeing the encasements which are completely corroded, and the actual agent sits on the bottom in lumps. It's leaking into the environment. We do not know the speed of leakage, because some objects are completely intact and some of them are completely corroded. And it seems that sea is degrading it to more stable forms, but some of those more stable forms are equally toxic as original agents. Whereas the mustard gas decomposes to thioglycol, which can be hydrolyzed completely in the seawater to sulfur and carbon and hydrogen, so it's pretty much harmless substances. Whereas those compounds which were based on arsenic oil, they are decomposing to inorganic arsenic, finally. And arsenic is, of course, a poison. We launched like three expeditions now to the dumping sites, collecting fish, cod mainly. And what we have seen is the higher frequency of fish diseases and also some impact on the genotoxicity, because those compounds are highly mutagenic. So our partners from Lithuania were able to see the mutated blood cells. We didn't yet, at least, detect toxic levels of arsenic in tissue, whereas we've been able to detect the arsenic in urine of fish. So it seems that it's affecting the fish health, but actually not to the extent which makes it dangerous to consumption. There are many pollutants in the environment which can cause similar effects, like organic contaminants, heavy metals, and so on. So it seems that chemical munitions are maybe not a single factor, but a factor which enhances the environmental damage.
First of all, we are interested in that the fishing vessels and the fishing or the fishers are not getting injured by fishing that substances up. And therefore, we encourage them to, by having a regime here in the Danish area where we compensate them economically by paying, in fact, the same amount for the cost of the value of the fish they could sell on the market. Here we have the mustard gas in the middle of the fishes. That is something that has happened through the years, going from fluid to solid mustard gas. We have recent cases, both in Denmark, but also elsewhere in the world, where you see that the fishing vessel, the people that are dealing with the chemical substances afterwards are contaminated and injured. So we still find subjects that contains both chemical substances but also the explosive.
Can you load in there?
We have a 24/7 365 response team ready to go out to sea and assist the fishing vessels that have caught chemical munitions. So that is the unique part of the unit here in Bornholm. The last chemical report that we have was in March this year here, so it's a couple of months ago. That's the only one this year. So compared to in the 90s, where we had more or less between 50 and 100 cases per year, it has gone down.
In recent years, deep-sea construction projects began in the Baltic Sea, and with them came fears that pollution could result with an accidental disturbance of the chemical arms. The Nord Stream gas pipeline had to be constructed around the dangerous zones because so far no European country has taken responsibility for cleaning up the chemical munitions in the sea. Americans who fought two world wars far from their own shores have now discovered a dangerous surprise close to home. United States officials now admit that thousands of tons of their own unused weapons were dumped by the military all around the U.S. coasts.
I was working on a investigation involving the local disposal of military munitions at the local bases when I saw photographs in the 1950s, the 1940s, and the 1960s of barrels of mustard gas and Lewisite and phosgene loaded up on barges being towed to sea. There are photographs of barrels of mustard gas being thrown overboard. The military's records were very sketchy. They were scant. They were conclusive to a degree that they were quite sure that there were a number of dump sites, dozens of them, off of 11 different states in the United States, presumably off of some coasts of some other countries as well. That was an eye-opener. There are three chemical weapon dump sites the U.S. Army has identified to very vague degrees off the coast of Virginia. One of them is right off the coast of Virginia Beach here, where all these people are playing volleyball and laying in the sun. It is in very deep water, presumably around 12,000 feet or so. It's out near the continental shelf. That's where their records indicate this dump site was created back in the 1940s. They can't say with any degree of certitude if it actually is that far out. The reaction was one, I would say, of shock. It was shock within the U.S. population. It was shock within Congress. Congress had no idea this had been going on or that there were potential dangers off of their coastlines. That they were shocked that there was little in the way of active monitoring of these dump sites or in the way, as far as they could tell, of any research being done to confirm their locations or to find other ones that the Army fully admitted that they expected to be out there. They just hadn't have any idea where they would be.
The Nord Stream project is setting new benchmarks. The dual pipeline, which is more than 1,200 kilometers long and runs through the Baltic Sea, links the energy markets of Western Europe and the huge natural gas reserves in Russia.
Baltic Sea fishermen face continuing threats that dangerous bombs or leaked substances will be caught in their nets. Bornholm Island, a Danish island, is in the middle of the Baltic, close to one of the largest dump sites.
I'm fifth generation fisherman on Bornholm.
And we have manual, so we can how to deal with this. We have areas where there are dumped chemicals, weapons. The yellow one is a precautionary area, and the red is where we should be extra careful. And you have Bornholm here, you have the Baltic, Gotland in Sweden, and also an area, and a red area for extra precaution.
English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to RIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, RIB English Radio.
This is for a better life. For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners from all around the world. Welcome back to IRIB English Radio. You are listening to the program For a Better Life. I am Bita, and once again, I have the honor to be at your service as the narrator of today's episode. And I'm here to share my experience and whatever I've learned up to here with you, and learn so many things from you too. So, dear listeners, thank you for being with me at this program. In this episode specifically, we're going to talk about the miracle of Holy Quran in our world, in our life. If we are living in a world full of materialistic point of view, and if you tell someone, for example, to recite Holy Quran for your heart to be calmed down, they may feel like, okay, you know, I have so many other problems to deal with. I have to do this, to do that. And, you know, I have children that I have to support them. And, you know, so many problems that are completely natural. But this spiritual part in our life is missing. Unfortunately, it will lead to a catastrophe. It will lead to a really, really bad phenomenon. That we are seeing the result and consequence of this ignorance and neglecting that we have towards this spiritual aspect of our life. And one of the consequences, which is a kind of common disorder in everyone, is depression. So let's go for more clarification of our topic of today, the Holy Quran, the miracle of Holy Quran. The glorious Quran is a book whose verses are firmly arranged and distinguished from the all-wise, the all-aware. So there is no doubt that Holy Quran is the word of Allah Almighty Himself. And Allah Almighty has revealed to His servant and messenger, peace be upon him, that he may be a warner to the worlds. So the glorious Quran is Allah's eternal message, His clear testimony, final argument, and undeniable proof in His eternal living miracle, which is given to the last of His messengers and the best of His creatures, Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. As an evidence verifying His prophethood, proof of His actually apostleship, and a light guiding mankind to the religion of Allah, and a guide leading towards the right path. So we get to this point that the Holy Quran is an important and essential and vital part of everybody's life in order to have a better lifestyle, in order to have a better life. Let's keep it here. We're going to go for a short break, then we're going to come back. Stay tuned, dear listeners.
Your mercy, Your love is all I need. So all I need. So all I need. All I need. All I need. Oh, 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 oh.
Your love is all I need. To be all so I can be. And I know that You see how much You need. You mean to me, 'cause Your love is all I need. To be all I can be, and I know that You see how much You mean to me.
Your love is all I need.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is IRIB English Radio for a Better Life. Talking more about the miracle of Holy Quran. We have so many verses in Quran that put their emphasis on this important factor that no one can bring any book even close to the book of Holy Quran. So let's have this verse. If you be in doubt about what we have sent down to our servant Muhammad, peace be upon him, then produce a chapter like it, and call your witnesses other than Allah, if you be truthful. This booklet, this living miracle that we are talking about, which is Holy Quran, is the miracle of all times. It's not something like temporary that is going to last only for a decade or more or less. It's for all people during all the history till the time of reappearance of our Imam, So we get to this point that we need Holy Quran. And Holy Quran is the only guideline, is the only book that we have to refer, we can refer to in order to have a better life. And many Muslims seem unaware of the potential of the Quran. It is usually read every day without fail, but its content is frequently neglected in our reading. Unfortunately, most of the time, we are so much busy with the fact that we are reciting Holy Quran as a habit that we forget the content and the real meaning of this book. And you know, the Quran reading to the average Muslim today is a formal or traditional custom to which he adheres because of social obligations. It is read in the funeral ceremonies or at the opening of meetings, despite the fact sometimes these meetings may be, you know, against Islam. So it's becoming a ritual, not something that we have to focus on or we have to think of. So, the Quran is losing ground in the lives of Muslims because of lack of comprehension or misunderstanding. This dangerous trend has been, you know, devised by the enemies of Islam, and the same people have begun to battle the Quran and cast doubts on its authenticity and glory. Let's go for a short break, then we're going to come back talking more about this neglecting of Holy Quran in nowadays life of people. IRB English Radio, for a better life, we are talking about the miracle of Holy Quran, the living miracle. So up to now, we can draw this conclusion that for so many reasons, the book of Holy Quran is being neglected in the life of Muslims of today's world. We are forgetting the content of this miracle in our life. So let's talk about the concept of miracle. Every prophet is granted the power of performing miracles in order to give proof of the authenticity of his message that is proceeds in fact from the creator of the universe. A miracle is an act that cannot be performed by the aid of a learning and practice. So miracles must conform to the mentality of the society in which a prophet is sent. Hence, the miracle of Moses, peace be upon him, was magic because of the atmosphere of that time, it was kind of expertise in magic and so on. Jesus, peace be upon him, cured the people from death and blind from birth. So, and all of these miracles, for sure, was by the will of Allah Almighty. This kind of miracle appealed because his society expected such act as proof of prophethood. Similarly, our prophet emerged amongst the Arabs who were experts in language and literature and challenged them in their own art. And this is the beauty of the miracle of Holy Quran. Actually, to wrap up the things that we talked in this episode, I have to tell you that, first of all, we have to understand and be aware of this sad fact that we are neglecting Holy Quran in everyday's life. And we are using it as a ritual instead of just studying Holy Quran as a book that we have to focus on. We have to think deep and deep on every word, every phrase, and every verse of this holy book. So in order to have a better life, we need to put and divide a specific time for reciting Holy Quran, and not only reciting it by habit, but also thinking on every little part of this book. So dear listeners, thank you for listening to me. I bid you farewell. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand.
share, he knows. Allah knows.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Lullaby, my darling, lullaby, my son, sleep in peace, sleep in silence. I've dug the earth with my hands, my bare hands. I've searched for my roots in this soil, this holy land, the land which is yours and which is mine, Palestine. And you, good earth, glorious land, son to you, see, I offer my son to you, only to you. I lifted his head from his mother's arms. I put him on your chest, still in red, to water you. My roots, Palestine, 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 Palestine. Lullaby, my darling, lullaby, my child, sleep in peace, sleep in silence. Since the story of my anger and your blood, the story of our mother's tears and your brother's cry, have to take us on, have to take us on. Lullaby, my darling, lullaby, my dear, sleep in peace, sleep in silence. Since somebody inside my aching heart, somebody inside our land, our blood joins in sacrifice, sacrifice. Your blood roots me here, this land.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
death toll for Israel's onslaught on the besieged Gaza Strip surpasses 11,000, mainly women and children, as the regime continues targeting schools and hospitals. Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi calls for united action by Islamic countries to stop ongoing Israeli genocide.